AM 1570 FM 104.5 WYTI in Rocky Mount, Virginia. Earl Van Shelton in the air chair. That's Jody Nix. Song titled The Only Thing I Want. 2:05, 5 minutes after 2 o'clock. And as we've been talking about it, we finally have the one and only Jamie Singleton in the studio with us. And Jamie, I've never been happier in my life to see you. How are you?
I'm doing well. A little bit busy today, Earl. I mean, we got all kinds of weather going on.
I'm telling you.
A busy winter, and it's coming in today.
We're going to talk about that, this impending snowstorm, and then from looking at your Twitter account and following you on Facebook, maybe another couple of weeks, we could have another major snowstorm coming up.
And what's coming in tonight, or this afternoon, actually, is coming a little faster than projected as a clipper. Maybe a coating of snow even in Rocky Mount in some spots. I do work for the town now officially, so I have to be right up on it all the time now, but it's fun. Matt Hankins is a great guy, and James Irvin, they got with me on that. So I do a little bit of that in addition to my work at Cable 12 and what I do on social media. This next couple of hours, clippers are tricky because they're not coming out of the Gulf. They're not our big snowstorms. They're coming across the mountains. And so they can drop a quick inch of snow in certain spots, even east of the mountains. So the timing of this, folks getting off school and work, it's going to be interesting the next few hours, but we'll be monitoring it for you.
You think this will reach down into Franklin County, or will it stay north of us?
The arms of it could reach into Franklin County. Yeah, I think officially the National Weather Service doesn't have us under the winter weather advisory. However, there are, in my experience, especially with that, I think it's, 35, 34 out right now?
35 degrees,
yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's cold enough for it to snow. It'll bring down that colder air from aloft. So if it can snow hard enough here, there could be some slushy accumulations. Would be under an inch probably, but some parts of it. Yeah, the county could see us home.
I remember years ago, meteorology has always interested me, and I remember years ago I did a report, actually my sister did, back in school, and I went with her. And I remember we interviewed Robin Reed, and I remember distinctly him saying, Jamie, that this is one of the hardest areas to predict the weather. Do you agree with that?
Well, I can't speak to other parts of the country because I haven't worked. I've been fortunate enough to kind of grow up here. I'll agree with that. It is very difficult, though, from what I've seen. I know our mountains play a very tricky role. The key to forecasting in any area is to be there long enough to do your own kind of research. In other words, we've got all kinds of computer models, Earl, now that have come so long since I graduated college with my meteorology degree in 2000. We would be lucky to go out 5 days with accuracy. And now we've got probably four times the modeling, probably 10 times the resolution, and we're going out weeks in advance now in terms of what they are trying to predict. The key to staying in tune with what's really happening, and I had a professor, Ed Brotak, up at UNC Asheville, who taught us the science of meteorology from the textbook. But what I liked about him, and he's retired now, but I was very fortunate to have learned under him, is he applied real-world techniques to what he taught. In other words, he would show us something out of the textbook and out of the theory, and he'd say, of course, in the real world, some of this can happen. So what I've learned to do from growing up here is what I call analog forecasting, and that is I just keep a memory of the storms that have happened here, especially the ones I miss, because that's a learning opportunity, and I take that and put it in my arsenal, my toolbox, and so the next time there's an event, I try to, like this clipper coming through, I can remember some clippers coating us with snow. So I use that in my forecasting, and I try to let that guide me and maybe giving a competitive edge sometime too.
I think you've answered a question for me that I wanted to ask you, because Jamie, in my time, I've noticed that 10 years ago, talking about tornadoes, you didn't hear about as many. Today, you hear it's like hundreds of tornadoes that are happening. Is it because the technology has improved and the forecaster can get the information out? Is that why there are many more, or have they increased?
Well, they've increased somewhat. There's some new research that suggests the new tornado alley has shifted from the plains in the lower Midwest to now the southeastern United States.
Wow.
And we get the northern extent of that sometimes. I've learned that we're getting a lot of these events where we get a cold air wedge where it's cloudy and foggy in the springtime and you're only like 42 degrees. But when you get those events and you have air just to your south coming in out of the opposite direction and it's like 70 in Greensboro, those are the events you have to watch for. And I've learned that most of the time you will see at least severe weather, if not tornadoes, along the boundary of that wedge. Mm-hmm. That's kind of some new research that I'm hoping to actually do and present it to the National Weather Service, because I know they've noticed that trend as well. When I started forecasting at WSLS in the late 90s and at Cable 12 in the 90s, yeah, we only had a couple of tornadoes every 5 years or so, and now the weather patterns are getting a bit more extreme, it seems. Now, whether or not you want to get into that whole, you know, global warming debate or whatever, There is, I'll call it climate change, but there's a tendency for these storms to not really increase as much as become more intense. Mm-hmm. And so the effects are more intense. And when you get competing air masses that are even more different, you can get severe weather as a result of that. So increase in technology, certainly cell phones, radar can pick it up better now. But you've also got the fact that the weather is probably changing a bit out there, too.
You know, I want to shift a little bit here. Mm-hmm. You've been such an inspiration to so many people. I have a niece who graduated Cornell in neurology. Yeah. And you were an inspiration to her. She loves you to death, well, so she said to tell you hello.
Well, good. I saw her pop up on my Facebook feed years ago, and I said, who is this bundle of energy? If you haven't followed her, she's a...
Jessica Hubbard.
Yeah, that's right. She is awesome as a meteorologist and as a scientist. She's got so much energy in her videos, and I really admire her, too.
Yeah, she went to Austin, Texas last year at the National Weather Service Conference and presented some information, and she goes into all of these things about meteorology. And I'm like, with you, I could talk mm-hmm. to you forever about it because it's so much to talk about. Tell us a little bit about how you got involved in meteorology. And when you were young, did the Weather Channel, were you glued to it?
Yeah, I was. We had, as you know, in broadcasting, the old-fashioned, you either had cable or you had a big C-band satellite dish, as big, you know, dishes that you have outside the station. You have those in your home back in the 80s. And I was fortunate when my parents got one of those. And so I would swing the dish around. I was a big fan of catching news feeds raw before, you know, people were on the air and you could see the live feed. So I got in tune with broadcasting that way almost. And I got into weather actually just from, I don't know, it was and a lot of meteorologists will tell you it's a bug that hits them really early in age. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how far it goes back, but I believe I was in kindergarten when we went down. We'd go down to Myrtle Beach every year with my family, my mom and dad and my sister. One year we went down through Bennettsville on your way down to Myrtle, and there had just been a tornado outbreak down there. So we saw the shopping center. I think it was an old Food Line. I'll never forget it. Just obliterated by this, you know, tornado. And as a 5-6-year-old kid, I was just mesmerized by that.
Yes.
And took pictures, had mom take pictures of it, and I still remember seeing the shrapnel kind of hanging through the beams, and that kind of destruction just had me in awe. And it was, I believe, later, either on that same trip or the year after, I can't remember now because I'm getting old. I turned 40 this year. Oh, goodness.
But we'll look out next. Here in about 10 years, you're going to get those AARP mailers. Be prepared.
But anyway, that same, either the same year or the year after, we had a minor hurricane, Hurricane Bob, come up through Myrtle Beach. And we actually were in the middle of it when back then you didn't know a lot about weather. I believe Dad finally made the call to go home. We ended up driving back through the whole thing. We followed the storm back instead of evacuating it, so to speak. But so all the way, I had the wind and the flooding and everything. And of course, Dad bought Riverside Bennett Market down here back in 1986.
Right.
Okay, so right after that, up to that time, it would flood there sometimes. And of course, I remember the flood of 85. I was in second grade. But after that, we would get, you know, really bad floods. The first time, I think in 87, mm-hmm. a year after he bought the store, it got up close to 4 feet inside, and his ice machine went floating across the road there.
Gosh, I remember that.
So I can remember cleaning up from that, and the smell of the mud and all that stuff. And those events stick with you because, and it's important to kind of go through that, I think, as a meteorologist, because whenever I'm forecasting a flood or a tornado or something, I think back to that trip in Bennettsville. I think back to Dad's store, and I relate those experiences to people. You know, you can sit behind computers, and folks at the National Weather Service, they do a great job. They really do. And all of the media meteorologists around here do, too, as well. And I've got lots of friends there. The thing about it is you always want to be relatable, and it's part science and you're part scientist, but if you really are into the media version of it and you're public, mm-hmm. you want to definitely be into the communication part and be able to explain the risk, explain the impacts and the uncertainty that's sometimes involved as well. But primarily you want to tell folks you know what they're going to be going through, or if you can bring that experience to the table, that makes your forecast all more relatable.
And when forecasters say, and they're giving out warnings, or a tornado mm-hmm. warning is coming, mm-hmm. and you give out a warning to get in the basement, yeah. you're just not saying that just to be funny. No, you're mean that. Take that
yeah,
serious.
And that's one of the craziest times. And the tornado warnings about, other than tornado emergency, which they've added now in the past few years, which means particularly dangerous tornado in a metro area. But around here, tornado warnings about the most serious you're going to get. When I'm on the air with that, whether it's Facebook or we try to simulcast these Facebook Lives now, as you know, it's you got so many platforms you can
yes.
go through now.
Yes.
It makes this radio thing kind of a jewel, really. You're trying to be serious, but you're trying not to freak out on the inside, too, because you know there's a potential somewhere in that storm of a tornado happening as you're speaking.
Right.
And so I was fortunate enough, too, in some of the hurricanes. When I worked for Channel 10, it was a Media General station. And so the company Media General had about 22 stations mm-hmm. stationed. And these are other affiliates. Some of them are CBS, ABC, and NBC, all up and down the Gulf Coast and all up and down the Southeast. They mm-hmm. were a Southeast station. So when there were hurricanes, they would send me to help the whatever station was in the path of them. So I was in Katrina back when it hit New Orleans. I wasn't in New Orleans. I was at the Jackson TV Media Journal Station, WJTV. But they had a repeater down near the coast mm-hmm. station. So people were watching me that were riding out Katrina at some point. And so your heart kind of stops, you know, when you are saying, okay, here comes, we were on the air for 12-hour shifts, and my shift happened to be the one where the eye wall was coming off the Gulf, and you're telling people brace for 155 mile per hour winds and destructive, you know, effects out there. And so it is kind of a surreal feeling.
I can imagine.
You kind of get this ear, you know, almost like when someone dies suddenly, you get that numbness kind of thing. It's kind of a numb feeling almost, just because you don't want to overhype it, or you definitely don't want to cause more alarm than you should, but at the same time, you know, you want to emphasize the seriousness of everything,
okay,
too.
Okay. That's a fine line there. I was going to yeah. ask you, have you ever done any storm chasing? You know, you talked about Katrina going down there, but have you ever just went out and just chased a storm to video it or see what it does?
I haven't gone, like, professionally with, like, some of the really cool storm chasers that you see now. I'm going to age myself here and tell you a story. We went out one time when I was in college, and this is probably 1997, I believe. We chased out of Asheville, right over the mountains was Tennessee. So there was a squall line coming out of Nashville. So we were going to intercept this thing. But back then, Earl, we didn't have our cell phones where we could see radar images. We didn't have all the computer modeling where we could see if the line was going to weaken or not within a few hours. You know, now the models will tell you that. They'll try to anyway. They'll try to pick out discrete storms, individual storms, and forecast them a few hours in advance. Back then, we only had 12-hour updates on our models.
Wow.
They didn't show us as much. And then the radar coverage was very limited as well. So we were actually calling and getting visuals via voice back from the weather lab to see what's going on. And we had an old-fashioned weather radio, which people still use, getting the alerts. So we were just flying by the seat of our pants for that event. And that's one of the only times I actually went out. And I've got it on VHS.
Keep it.
I'm going to put it on YouTube at some point. It's really kind of cool because we were just kids looking back. It was my friend Tim Armstrong, who's now the lead forecaster at the National Weather Service in Wilmington. And I believe Chris Hunt, who is down in North Carolina. He's a meteorologist, but some of these people get in the other fields. I think he's in banking now, I believe. But we all had a great time. It was spur of the moment. But I haven't, I've been hurricane chasing, but I haven't actually gone with the tornado chasing thing. Yeah, usually now it's a fight between that, because I've had a couple of tech graduates offer me to go with them. They're very successful chasers. And the names skip me at the moment, but you know, you're fighting that battle between chasing and then should I be in the studio updating folks on what's going on, and if I'm chasing, can I not get the updates out? So that's what's held me back probably the most from doing that. And it's also interesting that the tech chasers, Virginia Tech didn't have a meteorology program when I was at UNCA. That's why I went to UNCA. Since then, they've developed this great program over there, Dave Carroll and some of the professors over there. But neat to see them go out. I think they go out every May, and then they have a couple of trips where they take the students out and they get in the field. But what's been happening a lot, too, with that shift to the Tornado Alley I was talking about, they're going out, and we're getting severe weather back home, and they're out there sometimes not getting anything. So you can get more weather just by staying here sometimes, too.
Let me ask you, I don't want to hold you up, Jamie. I know you've got a lot going, but what do you see in the future for meteorology? How do you see the technology improving in the future?
I'm glad you asked that, because I wanted to touch on that. It's getting progressively better. Again, like I said, it's exploded over the past 10 or 20 years. A lot of what I've seen is research, which your sister is into, I believe, more in that
exactly
field. And that's fascinating, because you kind of graduate college with that degree and you think, okay, I'm a meteorologist, I got my job, I got my seal, I'm good. Meteorology is one of those fields, like many, that you have to just keep up with the research, and you have to keep up with all kinds of what's going on. So it's improved in two major ways. One of the ways is we can see these oscillations now, what we call the NAO. You may have heard the North Atlantic Oscillation. We look at El Nino and La Nina. We've been looking at that for a while, but there are all kinds of other ones now. The EPO, the WPO, MJO is another good one that's been coming up, Maiden-Julian Oscillation. Basically, we're looking in the Pacific Ocean over a span of weeks to see this cluster of storms that moves across, and when it gets into certain phases in certain months, it can provide us with overall wet or dry weather. And so you there's actually, research has supported what's going on there. So these longer range outlooks are getting easier to do now. I used to not do a winter weather forecast, but I started that about 5 years ago because I'm able to use some of that research there. Now, I will say that with the technology comes the danger, and I've seen on some of the media, some of the TV stations, probably not around here as much. I don't want to get myself in trouble, but even on national outlets, the models now will output certain parameters. In other words, there's all these websites you can go to, Pivotal Weather, and you'll see when you're on Facebook and you see an accumulation map for 20 inches being shared around, and then you end up,
that's
storm
right.
only getting three. And sometimes it verifies, but what's happening is a lot of meteorologists are just looking at these models because they're just showing them, all these specific parameters, where in my day we had to calculate that for ourselves and use more of our intuition and based on experience and analog forecasting I was talking about. So the danger, I think, is, and my professor called this meteorological cancer, it's going strictly by the modeling and not using your own own intuition to what you've learned in school to forecast. And a lot of it's very basic intuition. But if you can keep that going with the modeling, you're going to be in the best situation. But the danger, and it's a slippery slope, is trying to follow, and I'm guilty of it sometimes, trying to follow the models to a T, because they look so exact, but you have to remember that it's still only a model, and what God's going to have out there in the real world for you is going to be a lot of times different. So that's the biggest takeaway, I'd say, from the technology getting better. There's also the reverse, that you need to stay on top of your toes there when it comes to common sense forecasting. A lot of the folklore is based on common sense.
That's right. That's right. So, and Jamie, you're so respected in this field, and your accuracy is unprecedented. And we have so much respect for you. And how can people reach out to you on social media if they're not already part of your social media pages? Tell us a little bit about those.
Well, I've got a I started my personal page, I think in 2007 or 2008 on Facebook, just Jamie Singleton. A lot of people follow me there. But Facebook has got that weird thing where you can only have like 5,000 friends.
That's right.
And so at the time, I had just left Channel 10, so I was really anxious to get my forecast out there. So I was accepting every friend request I got just so I could have a platform. And that's been great, the timing of that coming out there then. So you can still follow me there. So it's going to say maximum number of friends or whatever, but you can still follow and get the same stuff. Now, what I've done is I've got a meteorologist page as well. I say that because when I started Facebook, there wasn't such thing as pages yet.
Right.
So I've been trying to get folks over to my meteorologist, Jamie Singleton page as well. And I've got the automated alerts there, and they can also hit me up there and email me there. I'm on Twitter, just Jamie Singleton on Twitter. And Instagram. Started doing more with Instagram in the past couple of weeks, Earl. I didn't know this, but I met a group of Benjamin Franklin Middle School Giroux Center students yesterday when they unveiled that love sign that
Wasn't
they worked
that
on.
That
was
that.
So cool. But a girl came up to me, Libby's her name, and she was asking me questions about science, and she's going to be another version of your sister, I think. She's definitely into the science and the geeky stuff. And she says, I'm a cheerleader as well, but I go home in my spare time and I build robots. I'm like, that's really cool. But anyway, she was saying that she recognized me from her Instagram account, that she had no idea about my Facebook following, no idea about the Cable 12 stuff. It was more of a Instagram thing with the newer kids now. So you have to really keep going with all this. You know, they're the future. And
it's exciting. I love to see young folks get excited like that.
Yeah, yeah. It's really cool. It's great.
Jamie, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to come by here and talk with us. You're welcome anytime to come in. If
I will tell you,
we'll use this as a platform.
I'm a radio TV nerd, and so I like just hanging out. I wanted to give a plug for you guys, local radio folks that you're listening. I feel like a lot of times stations like this get taken for granted, but I know you've got some faithful listeners out there. A lot of times, especially nowadays, what's going on is there's these big companies that own all these radio stations, and they're national companies. And I've got great friends in broadcasting that work for those, and TVs like that as well. And what I tell folks about Cable 12 and WYTI is it's local, it's locally owned, it's community, it's going to be more community based, and it's you don't see a lot of that around the whole world. You don't see, especially in the United States, you don't see a lot of locally owned anything anymore.
That's right.
You know, everything's either Walmart or whatever. And so there's, you got Clear Channel and radio and stuff like that. So for YTL, what Susan and Bill did here, it's just awesome.
62 years they'll be celebrating their 62nd anniversary
at
the radio
amazing.
Station in April.
That's amazing. And we see you guys out at the football games of Cable 12. And
yes. We need to start maybe connecting together Cable 12 and WYTI.
Well, we're not far away from each other
right.
in the press box
that's
either.
Right.
It's just a lot of fun. And so beyond weather, you know, you're kind of when you're in TV weather or whatever, you're more into broadcasting plus science. So it's a combination of that. So anyway, I love hanging out and just talking radio and playing music and stuff. That's fun too.
Well, look, you're welcome to come here. We'll do a morning show together.
Yeah, that'll be cool.
Well, let's see. I do a Friday show from 11 until 1 and then 4 to 6. Maybe you can come in and we can partner up.
Yeah,
and,
that'd be cool.
And, go on the internet, tell some jokes, make some calls, prank some people. Look out.
I love it. Taking requests and stuff. That's awesome.
Jamie Singleton, again, thank you so
thank
much
you,
for
Earl.
Dropping by. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. It is 2:28, and here's Aaron Neville with the Grand Tour on AM 1570 FL 104.5 WYTI in Rocky Mount, Virginia.
Step right up. Come on in. If you like